Lonnie Smith. I was going to say, don't, this is not Lonnie Liston Smith, and I said it. It is not Lonnie Liston Smith. This is Dr. Lonnie Smith. They both play the organ, but two different Smiths. Lonnie Smith on the Hammond B3 organ with Play It Back. It's from his 2016 album, Evolution. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And today we are bringing up, following up again on our favorite topic, the Clinton Foundation. A wide-ranging FBI probe into the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation, we called it the Clinton Foundation for short, reportedly launched months before formal confirmation last week, is raising new questions now about whether it initially was impeded by Clinton and Obama loyalists within the Trump administration. Even so, it appears that the investigation into the foundation has reached a critical point, and the public may soon know whether the Clintons and or other officers of the foundation are to be charged with operating the charity as a criminal enterprise. As you know, Charles Ortel, our very own Charles Ortel, retired Wall Street banker turned financial investigator and a sworn enemy of charity fraud, has been forensically examining the foundation's operations and records for 2 years, and he has been reporting here his findings as he gets them, as he unearths them. He declared that evidence he had been uncovering for these 2 years clearly suggests that the foundation is, quote, the largest unprosecuted fraud in U.S. history, unquote. And he's with us again today to file his latest report. Hello, Charles. Good to have you with us today.
Oh, thanks so much, Eutrice, for welcoming me back on. Appreciate it.
Well, how could we not welcome you back on? Well, things are heating up, it seems, but what does it mean that it's heating up?
Well, this is actually, as I think about it, perhaps the most significant development yet, and I'll tell you why. The Clinton Foundation, as we've discussed in the past, has never actually produced a legally compliant, independent audit of its financial statements. That's a key building block for a charity. Absolutely, a charity, you know, even much smaller than this Clinton Foundation, but certainly the Clinton Foundation, from birth in 1997, absolutely had to get such a document. It had to be done properly by accountants who were independent and competent to do the work. If you screw up the first year's audit, then no subsequent audit can be correct. They didn't even produce tax forms for the first partial year. Through 2004, the audits, just to refresh everyone's recollection, the, in quotes, audits were fake audits, which seems to be what the Clintons like to do. Everything's fake. Fake progress, fake audits, fake this, fake that, fake philanthropy. But so now we're in a place, sitting here in January 2018, and a whole bunch of donors to the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton Foundation and allied charities have all completed a year, which means that their accountants now have to put together books and account records, both for the Clinton Foundation, but for all the donors. And now we have the material fact that the FBI has announced, or whoever announced, somebody announced, the FBI and Justice are indeed investigating the Clinton Foundation for a variety of things, but one of which is for incorrect tax filings. And we also know that the IRS has been investigating the Clinton Foundation since July of 2016. So if you do know that, and it's a matter of public record, it was blazed around the world. I was on a radio broadcast, a television broadcast on Saturday with the Turkish BBC. I mean, nation after nation around the world is looking at this. And so the FBI and the Department of Justice and the IRS are now under immense pressure, because if they don't, they have to, you know, either say there's nothing wrong here, in which case they're going to lose immense credibility, or they have to go and admit that there's a massive set of errors in the Clinton Foundation that goes back 20 years. They're going to have to give donors enough chance, enough time to complete their own tax forms, which at the latest are due November 15th, 2018. So there's real, for the first time in the history of this whole long mess, we have a regulatory system in the United States of America where the IRS is not in thrall to either the Bush family, the Clinton family, or the Obama family. There's a new person in who's supposed to be independent as the head of the IRS. There's a new person in, and I have my issues and questions about the head of the FBI. Let's see how he acquits himself. I think it's Christopher Wray, new head of the FBI. We have Jeff Sessions, head of the Justice Department. We have Donald Trump as president. We have Republicans in control of both houses. We have a pressing need to close a budget deficit. We have a large charity fraud, the largest ever attempted in history, largest set of frauds. And we also have, on January 29th, 2018, the prospect that an African-American woman, Corinne Brown, we've talked about her before, a Democrat, who lost her election campaign. She would have been in for 24 years, I think. Maybe she served for 24 years as a congresswoman. This lady is going to go to federal prison on January 29th and begin serving a five-year term at age 71. She was indicted in the middle of her campaign in 2016. She was convicted. She faced 350 years in prison. The sentencing memo of 50 pages that was tendered by the prosecutors is a beauty. Really deserves to be read. And she was convicted. She appealed. She tried to say, look, I'm going to appeal this, so don't make me go to prison right away. And the judge said, hell no, you're going to prison. So if there's that standard for an African-American congresswoman, 24 years in Congress, over $800,000, please explain not simply why Hillary Clinton is out of, you know, not facing justice, but why aren't Hillary and Bill and people like Terry McAuliffe, who were centrally involved in this in the beginning, and other directors and significant donors like Bill Gates and all the accounting firms and law firms and outside directors and other significant donors, the private foundations, why aren't they in trouble? Why is it fair to throw this 71-year-old African-American Democrat in federal prison at age 71 and complete the process pretty quickly over $800,000? I mean, I think Bill Clinton, well, in speeches alone, he made far more than $800,000. And so in one case, I think he made close to $800,000 for one speech. Here's a charity whose total revenues, declared revenues, over a long period of time were only $800,000. We throw the book at that, but we let the Clinton Foundation off. That just ain't right. And that, you know, on substance, the Clinton Foundation, forgetting Corinne Brown, should have been shut down and people put in prison a long time ago for the frauds.
We still have a question now. Apart from everything that you just said, there's a question now of what impeded, why did it take so long to get an official inquiry into the Clinton Foundation, despite the fact that so much evidence was available and people were calling, people like you, were calling attention to the fact that there is a major problem with the Clinton Foundation and it ought to be looked into?
Well, I think this story, in the end, if it gets told fully, it goes all the way back, likely even before January 20th, 1993, when Bill Clinton rolled into Washington, D.C. to live in the White House. There's been a long pattern and practice here of the Clintons asserting that they were, you know, agents of good, agents of public servants, getting themselves into a position where they held sway over vast amounts of untraceable money, and, you know, having that money, portions of it disappear or go to friends and cronies. And, you know, our system, our in quotes, modern system of accounting is not really up to the task of, you know, producing a report to all Americans of how, you know, our government writ large spends money on our behalf. We don't get such reports. We get these confusing documents that, you know, most people, and myself included, have a great difficulty understanding what actually happened with all the money that gets spent. The regulators, whether they're over the capital markets, the banks, You name it, the regulators are not equipped to keep up with the fraudsters. There is no global system powerful enough to keep track both of the large markets, the companies that operate in many large markets, as well as the companies and charities that operate in these small tax havens where there's loose governance and rife with corruption. So, you know, this the Clintons have been doing this for a long time. And I think what may have happened, which is perhaps the book that Hillary won't write, what may have happened, is that once Bill and Hillary won, they reasoned, okay, you know, let's do this for 8 years. Let's put Jeff Gerth, a famed Pulitzer Prize-winning author, has written a book to this effect, suggesting this was the case. They got into the White House. They were determined to remain in the White House for the full 8 years. They put their people into key positions. Those people were put in not as political appointees, but as career people, but basically they're political partisans. They've been in there, in some cases, since 93, in other cases, since maybe 2000. They've had a chance to burrow deeply in throughout justice, the IRS, the Federal Election Commission, you name it, any regulatory bodies that are important. They can exercise, in certain cases, prosecutorial discretion, both to go after enemies as well as to reward friends by letting things drop. They've been at this for a long, long time. And you know, initially, when Bill committed, I think, really one of the worst acts that he's committed was pardoning Mark Rich. When he did that, there still were enough Clinton loyalists inside the IRS, inside the FBI, inside justice and elsewhere, that the investigation that started in February of 2001 into the Clinton Foundation, actually, and that was headed from 2002 forward by U.S. Attorney in the Southern District, James Comey, and when the FBI from September 4th, 2001 forward was headed by Robert Mueller, these people, judging by the FBI vault file documents, and judging by documents that are in the public domain, they should have known this was a massive fraud then. But they let it escalate. They let it expand internationally. And ultimately, right around the time it seems that Bill Clinton had his first heart attack, I think in August 31st, 2004, right around then, somebody made a decision to sort of, you know, not pull the trigger on the investigation. Was it the spectacle that it would be just too embarrassing to have to admit, as the Clinton Foundation complex, you know, was finally going to be open to the public on November 18th, 2004, would it have been just too embarrassing to tell everybody that, you know, the Clinton team had committed massive fraud right under the eyes of Mueller and Comey, and that they just said, well, we can't admit this, so we better give them a pass, just tell them not to do anything this bad again. We really need to go back and understand what truly happened. And it just isn't right. If we're going to have, you know, a set of laws, they should be applied even-handedly and fairly. And we shouldn't have a system where people compete to run the country as president, knowing that if they win, they can reward all their enemies and punish all their punish all their enemies and reward all their friends. That's not the way the system of justice is supposed to operate in this country. And yet it seems in this long period from 1989 forward, when, you know, globalism or the so-called New World Order began to take shape, it seems like that's what actually happened. And people who were prepared to be useful, like James Comey, ended up, you know, staying, not only having high positions, but going from them to take a big job at Lockheed, fancy plum compensation at a gigantic hedge fund. You know, you play along with the system and you get your rewards. You buck the system, you know, and you get targeted. And I think this has been going on for too long. I think it explains, you know, the enthusiasm for one vision of how to fix it in Bernie Sanders and the enthusiasm for another vision under Donald Trump. But I think 2016 was all about rejecting this cronyism and rejecting these crooked deals and rejecting the maladministration of justice. So you're right. It's not simply the Clinton Foundation that we need to look at. It's why has this obvious fraud been allowed to escalate under Republican and then under Democratic presidential administrations for 16, 17 years.
And that would include the administration of one Barack Obama.
Indeed.
Because his Justice Department seemed to have very little interest or no interest at all in looking at the Clinton Foundation. In fact, the Clinton Foundation seemed to be uncomfortably close to that administration.
Exactly. I mean, I like to think the most benign explanation here is that, and we do know, just looking, all I have is what's in the public domain, we do know during the primary campaign in 2007 and 8 that there was a high degree of hostility between the Obama camp and the Clinton camp. It wasn't like it was, you know, two best friends deciding, you know, nobody can lose because if one of us wins, we'll all be better off. I mean, there were some harsh words said in either direction. And, you know, I think we really deserve to understand how much the Obama team may have known about the Clinton Foundation during the campaign period. As a suspicion, they, like most people, took at face value the notion that maybe this Clinton Foundation was off doing good works around the world, and isn't it noble how, you know, Bill was working with the man he bested, H.W., on the tsunami project in Katrina, and, you know, there's probably, it's all good. You know, maybe that was the tone that the team took, and maybe they didn't really know the diabolical state of the Clinton Foundation, you know, certainly by 2004. And so maybe Team Obama was hoodwinked by the Clintons in that June meeting when supposedly Hillary met with Barack Obama at Dianne Feinstein's house, and some sort of truce was concocted, wherein ultimately the Clinton organization helped raise money and attract voters to the general election contest, which I would say was, you know, I don't think McCain had much of a chance, frankly, but it was certainly helpful that the Clintons, you know, rolled in a bunch of money and their media contacts and helped get voters out to the polls. And maybe it's the case that, you know, that in the period between the election result, which I think was November 4th, 2008, and Barack Obama's being sworn in, maybe the Clintons hoodwinked the Obamas again. You know, because the Clinton Foundation in that period was in disastrous shape. By all rights, it should have been shut down then. But, you know, they made these ridiculous claims and this memorandum of understanding about the great state of the Clinton Foundation, which did not file its paperwork properly in any year, in any country, in any state in which it had operated. And they made the pretense that this agreement would somehow regulate any potential conflicts. And then Team Obama cooperated with Team Clinton to sell a false narrative about her accomplishments, her role, and the state of the Clinton Foundation in hearings to the fellow senators that ultimately won her confirmation as Secretary of State and starting work on January 21st, 2009. So maybe it was the case, as the case of, you know, the original investigation that was stopped, that it was just too damn embarrassing for Team Obama, if they even knew the state of the Clinton Foundation early on in the first days of the administration. It was just too embarrassing for them to admit they'd been outplayed by the Clintons. So they had no alternative but to cooperate. I mean, maybe that's the most benign explanation.
Now, yeah, I like that. That's the right word, benign. I don't think any of that was the case. I think this was an agreement among thieves. By then, if not Obama himself, but his team of very expert political advisors would have advised Mr. Obama to be very careful in his dealings with the Clintons, because they come with a lot of bad history. And the minute, well, basically she decided that she should be, he had to name her Secretary of State, which was a plum assignment. And he kowtowed to it. He let her have her way. And what happened as a Secretary of State? You do a lot of traveling. Hillary Clinton put in more air miles than practically any Secretary of State. And we never, as a country, as a nation, got a report about what it is she was doing all over the place, flying on Air Force One and taking friends and family along for the ride, staying at the best hotels and enjoying the best of accommodations, and meeting people who ended up being part of that pay-to-play operation that she was running. Hillary Clinton was running her own parallel government, and it I cannot accept that advisors to Obama didn't basically pull his ear about this and didn't discuss that there was a problem in their administration, one with the very appointment of Hillary Clinton. She had no experience in this area, but okay. She wants Secretary of State, and she got it. And then she put together that health care plan as a de facto member of cabinet, which she had no portfolio for. She just decided she was going to arrange a health care plan to suit her needs and, to generate revenue. I mean, the signs were so clear even before we got as far as Hillary Clinton being appointed Secretary of State, that the Clintons are bad, bad news.
Well, it's in some ways even worse than that. I mean, unlike prior Secretaries of State and succeeding Secretaries of State, all the while that Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, there was no Inspector General at the State Department. So while there was this MOU, this Memorandum of Understanding, supposedly regulating conflicts, there was nobody, sitting above the State Department, empowered to make an issue and cross-check. You know, as we'll soon learn, there's an Inspector General of Justice that apparently is going to have a report any minute that may touch on some of these issues. But there was no such person. There was no top cop overlooking the Secretary of State. And in the Secretary of State province, the potential for corruption. I mean, yeah, we after all, we operate embassies and consulates in most countries in the world. Many countries have, even more corruption than we have, which is difficult to imagine, but they do. And there's a lot of money flying around. There are a lot of people flying around. And, one thing I should mention in this connection, the FBI investigation, a portion of it has to do with the Clinton Foundation, but another has to do with a very serious matter that has not received enough attention. During the campaign, the Clintons' surrogates were frequently stated that the reason that Hillary's emails were being chased down, it was part of a normal security review. It involved all previous secretaries of state and their practices using personal email. Nothing to see here. Move along. The reality is that the decision by the Clintons to operate 100% of their email traffic from private servers and private electronic devices that in hindsight now seem not to have been secured was a radical departure from past practice, and somebody must have allowed that to happen. The private server domain name Clinton email, I think, came in around January 8th or 9th, I forget the exact date, but before she was confirmed as Secretary of State, that email address was started working. So somebody prior to confirmation it was okay to do that. And we haven't yet gotten visibility into all the email traffic, not simply, from that point forward, but previous email traffic. Supposedly Bill doesn't use email. As a guest, he has it sent to the house person in Chappaqua, Oscar Flores, but or other people, Tina Flournoy. But there's a large amount of email traffic that a real FBI, not a Federal Department of Exoneration, but a Federal Department of Investigation, would have been able to get its hands on. Who approved the idea that, arguably the most likely to be compromised sets of emails, that is to say all of them having to do with the Secretary of State around the world, who approved the notion that in a major league departure from the past, these would be housed on private servers and people would be using private devices? Who allowed that process to happen, not from the date she left to the present, but from January 21st 2009 to the present? I mean, why, in this context, with this radical departure, why also was there no inspector general? Did nobody complain about this? Did nobody notice that these emails?
There was no reason. Deep answer to that is quite apparent. I think she did not want one. She made sure that the Department of State would have no inspector general, no oversight at all. And so she got her way again. She was able to run an agency, which, by the way, was something of there were millions of dollars that were not accounted for. Billions of dollars not accounted for when she was Secretary of State and the department showed incredible deficits. Now, all of this says that the Obama administration had to have known that there was something radically wrong here. Every couple of days, Hillary is off to some place or the other, ostensibly on state business. But I had asked a question very early. Why aren't we getting any reports from whatever it is that she flew off to do? What was the result? What was the reason for her going? And what was the result that was yielded? All this entourages accompanying her, and she put in all those hundreds of thousands of air miles flying all over the place. My contention was that she began the business of the foundation of securing donations and dealing with people who she could call upon to donate. By the way, as you have looked at the records, how do we account for the fact that in certain years, the average salary of Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton was about $27, going on $28 million a year?
Exactly.
That's what they claimed.
Yeah, that's what they bothered to declare. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't pass the smell test. Thanks for bringing that up. I did a presentation on Sunday, my Sunday with Charles show, that you can see on YouTube, with Crowdsource the Truth, where we do a table, we go into that. I think that Bill and Hillary lack a moral compass, but they're not stupid people, completely stupid people. So if they were to apply themselves in the private sector in a competitive business where they wanted to make money, they probably could make money. But when you look at the actual record of what their tax returns show for 2001 to 2015, they show a meteoric increase in compensation on declared revenues. We don't know whether they would be stupid enough, which I suspect they are. They were stupid enough to have offshore accounts that they haven't declared, or interests in companies they haven't explained, or funds that are parked offshore. But just from what they've declared, you're right. In 2013 and 14, in the year before the presidential contest, so 2007, and then the year of the presidential contest, they make less money. So in 15, their income went down. But in 13 and 14, they were making, I think, one case $27 million, the other case $29 million. That's a lot of money to be making running a charity.
I would say, and that's probably, in fact, I would say that's definitely not the total amount. That's just what they chose to declare.
Right. And you know, this is a team that would seriously, before the world public, quibble about the meaning of the word is.
Is.
Right? These are people who quibble about the plain meaning of language. So would these people stoop to the idea of, you know, I can't pay Utrice $10 million for legal services. I know what I'll do. She's not a lawyer. I'll pay her $10 million to be my consultant. You know, you don't have to do anything in either case. I mean, there needs to be some regulation of this. We can't have people, you know, operating charities, operating large institutions, operating the government, you know, with the ability of just giving basically just bribes to people, you know, just gifts to people, and pretending that they work. I mean, we can't have a situation where government officials like Uma Abedin are holding down four jobs at once. I mean, it's tough enough in this country to get one job. How do you justify giving Uma Abedin four jobs while she's also working? You know, three more than the one where she's working for the State Department. That's ridiculous. You know, get one job, you should spend 24/7, 365 days of the year on your public servant job, and you should be doing it because you're trying to better the economy, not better Democrats, not better Republicans. You're trying to better all of us.
And but we see, too, that the Trump administration is picking up from where the Clintons left off in this regard with his own family. Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner and others close to him. Well, of course, Bannon is no longer with the group. But, you know, you have Jared Kushner just receiving a $30 million payout from an Israeli company. It has nothing to do with his supposed job as a senior advisor to the president. Yeah, you have Ivanka Trump wearing all of her newest styles from the company that she made, that she heads. I mean, when does it stop? They're all behaving the same way.
Well, on that one, you make excellent points, as usual, and I would just remind your listeners that I was, I think, one of the first people on Fox to say that absolutely all of the Trump family should place all of it. I mean, you know, if Barron has assets, little Barron and Melania, you know, all of these people should have their assets placed in a blind trust so long as Donald Trump is president for their protection. Not, you know, they would have been much smarter, in my opinion, to do that because, you know, then with the assets in a blind trust, if Jared Kushner wanted to go off and be a senior advisor, he could do that. But because they haven't placed him in a blind trust, you know, I think reasonable people, even people who like what Donald Trump is doing with the economy and with international stuff and at home domestically, even people who do think that, and I do think much of what he's doing makes a lot of sense, people are going to be forced to say, look, you know, this is not wise what you're doing here. And eventually you can get in trouble.
Well, and they're brazen, just like the Clintons. They're in your face with doing these illegal things. They just won't let up.
I guess there are different types of adjectives. There's Clintonian, there's Trumpian. I think Clintonian brazenness is, that's the platinum standard. I mean, remember, they were in the White House, dead broke, I think as much as $15 million in debt. And since then, now 17 years later, how much are they worth? I mean, at least Donald Trump inherited some money. I mean, at least he's, you know, 71 years old. He's actually been in the private sector for what, 50 years, starting with advantages. I mean, you can explain his wealth. You cannot explain the Clinton wealth.
Well, in as much as this new federal investigation is taking place and supposedly is going somewhere, we still have the connection to be made between the Secretary of State job that Hillary had and the Clinton Foundation. Is this part of the architecture of the ruse, how they managed to work? They leveraged Hillary's international purview, her whole international slant, which of course allowed her to travel all over the place and cut deals and make profits, and use the foundation as a kind of laundry for a lot of money that still is unaccounted for.
Yeah, I think it works something like this. I mean, the music that we played was, I forget from where it came exactly, but that song, Do the Hustle. You know, that's the music we see. It was a global hustle. Started out as an Arkansas hustle, and then it became a global hustle. And so the basic constructs are the following, that foreigners have much to gain inside the United States and outside the United States from being closely tied in to a potential president, a past president. I mean, it's enormously valuable if you're sitting there in Kazakhstan with the world breathing down your neck for being a dictator to have a former president show up and say, hey, this is really great what you've done here. People should learn more about all the progress in Kazakhstan. I mean, that's worth an enormous amount to that leader, particularly if that leader can then be, because of your globalist context, put into some position of respectability in some UN forum or at the World Economic Forum or elsewhere. I mean, it's, you know, you can do a lot for foreign leaders. You could do a lot for foreign businessmen. You can do a lot as well for American business people who are trying to do international deals. So there's all many, many ways to monetize this nexus of relationships that the Clintons have built over decades. Particularly, you know, under a theory that Hillary Clinton might well be the next president of the United States for eight long years, and who knows, after that, Chelsea could follow. So, you know, people who have business interests in the billions and tens of billions or more around the world, you know, could move themselves to think about sending money towards a supposed foundation and not asking too many questions. Because, you know, they could always say, well, we assumed we did some work and it seemed like they were, you know, there was more good than bad. And yeah, there were a few technical problems, but, you know, look at the sacrifices of the long careers in public service of these people. You know, you could make some straw man argument as to why you gave them $100 million if you're Bill Gates. But he really shouldn't have done that. And in terms of a charity, you know, most people would not think that a charity would become a money laundry. I mean, you would. We all know people who run charities. We all know people who give to charities. We all give to charities. Most of them, particularly those in America, are pretty well run, thoughtfully run. People take the law seriously, the rules seriously. They try to do all good. And you know, the notion that a presidential foundation might be the largest unprosecuted fraud in world history is not the first thing people might think about. And I'm never going to be able to explain why I decided to focus on it. It came to me by chance, honestly. Somebody came to me and said, you know, you got to take a look at this thing. It took me a while to figure out just how enormous the fraud is. But it's not the first sort of thing you're going to think. So operating under the cover of respectability, you then do what she did at the State Department. You have crony trustees, crooked accountants, multiple secret offices, you use secret servers, and you cross-fertilize. You know, while she's Secretary of State, you make all these international contacts around the world, both foreigners trying to do stuff in America and around the world, and Americans trying to go around the world. And many of these people are engaged in charity. You get all their contact information. Most important, you convince these foreign governments to give your own foundation money. And then you make sure that the statements are so complicated and the reports are so complicated that nobody can figure out what really happened with all that money. And then you have, you know, great writers, maybe fresh out of college, concoct these fanciful tales about how you're fighting climate change and mentoring people in Harlem and doing all this stuff, and nobody's checking any of it. And it becomes a perfect vehicle to send crooked money to the Clintons, to send, you know, to route money to dictators who can help you out, help your donors out with mining contracts and telecom contracts. It's just a perfect laundry. On top of which, you have, you know, Bill Clinton and others flitting around the world in private aircraft that maybe nobody's really checking to see what's inside the private aircraft. And here I'm not thinking so much contraband and diamonds and stuff like that as papers that you might not necessarily want people to see that get sent to these tax haven locations and fringe countries. So it's a gigantic mess, and I think what we see now with the FBI and the Department of Justice admitting that they are investigating it, and also what we see in the FBI vault file, that there was an investigation that began July 10th, 2015 into Hillary Clinton and Uma Abedin mishandling classified information. There was such an investigation, and it sure looks to me like that investigation was stymied by possibly the very same people who then turned around and accused the Trump team of colluding with Russia. So there's a big story there as well.
Okay, so when we take a look at this, we've been talking vaguely. Have you come to some idea about what the numbers look like, the kind of money that has been, handled by this foundation?
Well, so by the foundation narrowly, just the Clinton Foundation, has declared, I think, from round numbers, $2.3 billion in revenue. So we have no idea that, that's the minimum amount of money that the Clinton Foundation received. Okay, we have no idea how much additional money may have been sent towards the Clinton Foundation, but never actually reached its books. So,
nor do we have any idea of how much money simply has just disappeared and might be in overseas banks or secret bank accounts. We don't know. But
right.
At least you think 2-point-something billion?
That's just for the Clinton Foundation alone. Okay, that's and then you start, you count the revenues, and you say, the first step in this kind of a fraud is how much money disappeared before it became declared revenues. Then how much of the declared revenues disappeared? And the way you would make declared revenues disappear is you create phony invoices. You would say, I spent $500 million on HIV/AIDS medicine, when in reality you didn't. And this is why you need an audit. This is why you need a real audit, not somebody based in Little Rock with no capacity to examine any of these books and records in Africa and India and Asia and Papua New Guinea, et cetera. This is why the IRS requires and states require a real audit. And so when you see fake audits, as I did, and you see nobody caring about it, you got a serious problem. And in this area, a bunch of accounting firms have gone out of existence, and many different accounting firms have different offices of a large number of accounting firms have either missed, in which case there are serious problems, or have known about and decided to overlook even more serious problems. So a large number. You got BKD, you got Price Waterhouse, you got Cohen Resnick now, you have KPMG in a certain role, and a bunch of Mitchell and Titus is another one, Gary McGee and Company, a strange one out in Portland, Oregon. There are a large number of these firms that have just not done their work. And then you have allied charities and allied efforts. So the Haitian relief effort that was run by Bill, no books and records for that. That's anywhere from 10 to 15 billion. The Global Fund, which worked in coordination with the Clinton Foundation on many projects, that's up in the 50, 60 billion dollar range. And I could go on and on and on.
In the meantime, we're seeing, as this FBI is pursuing a little bit more aggressively than it started out, this Clinton Foundation and its related operations, we're seeing foreign governments making an aggressive move as well. What's the latest with them?
Well, I think what I think happened is with the announcement that the FBI, in fact, is investigating the Clinton Foundation, and with previous announcements that many governments had given outsized sums to the Clinton Foundation, and then after Hillary lost, decided no longer to support as much the Clinton Foundation, I think it is past time that investigative journalists in these countries start pounding the table and asking, in the United Kingdom, Theresa May, please explain why the United Kingdom made a £1 billion 20-year commitment, over 20-year commitment to Unitaid in 2007 at a time when about a half of all the money that Unitaid was spending was going to a Clinton Foundation entity that didn't exist. Please explain that. Please explain why you continued to fund Unitaid and why the UK, through various pockets, government pockets, has sent money to the Clinton Foundation. And please also explain why various UK institutions, one large foundation, the Children's Investment Fund Foundation in the UK, that is to say in England, Sir Tom Hunter's, the Hunter's Foundation, is in Scotland. Please explain why these august names operating in the UK continue to send money to obvious frauds. Please explain that. And, you know, then in France, don't smile too much because, you know, you're the biggest funder of Unitaid. Please explain why this Unitaid, this collection of governments, has sent more than $600 million to a fraud and why you haven't tried to get the money back. And now moving down under, where the shrimps are on the Barbie in Australia, you know, you got $100 million or so that you sent towards the Clinton Foundation. Explain that. And explain why, perhaps through the intercession of the Clintons, with their contacts at the UN, the World Health Organization, elsewhere, please explain why so many former leaders, either prime ministers or foreign ministers of Australia, are set up in these charities that are funded by multilateral organizations. Please explain that. And how about you, Mr. Trudeau, up there in Canada? Why is your government still supporting the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton Health Access Initiative? And how about you in Norway? You know, these types of questions, I think, are going to be asked with increasing pressure. And soon, one of these governments is going to crack. They're going to have to crack.
Well, there are 11 countries that should provide some answers, many of them on the African continent. The Clintons have a penchant for going to the black world when they're dealing really nasty deals. What are we hearing from the African world?
So far, not much. I mean, and it's actually many more than 11 in Africa, because you see the Unitaid money, a lot of it went to African went to the Clinton Foundation to buy drugs to go down into Africa and Asia. So it's more like, you know, probably when you think about all the countries where the Clinton Foundation had projects they were supposed to be involved with, it's probably more than 50. And, you know, I think, sadly, that a lot of these countries basically exploit charities. They reason that you know, it's a way to get government-to-government grants, and if the grants are going to have to come in through a charity, well, you know, you get to these poor people or these people from Iowa or wherever, or, you know, rural New York, and you send them to the center of Africa, and they have no electricity and no roads and no ability to communicate and, you know, no way of getting out of the country that easily without the local government cooperating. It's easy to see how You could have a lot of corruption, and the argument could be, if the charity is here to give money away anyway, why doesn't it just give it to me? You know, and so that this whole area of policing charities, making sure that the trustees of charities understand their obligations, making sure that accountants understand their obligations, making sure that donors do their diligence, this is a perfect test case to put a marker down in the sand and say, you don't want to do what the Clintons did. Let us show you what they did. Don't do this. Because when you do this, you end up in jail. You end up having to give all your money back. You end up never being able to run for public office again. That's what happens when you use a charity for personal enrichment to fund political campaigns and are not careful enough to make sure that you don't engage in foreign corrupt practices.
Well, that's on one level. On another level, Charles, we have a horrendous situation to deal with, which is, take for example, the HIV/AIDS program that they allegedly ran using adulterated medications, having no infrastructure at all to follow up on the so-called the good works that they were doing in preventing HIV and AIDS. At some point, we have to confront this particular program as having possibly genocidal effect. This is not just about, well, they're stealing the money and they're shifting money around. It's about the lives of people. When you engage in a massive fraud like this, you partner with a crooked pharmaceutical company that is distributing these adulterated drugs, these absolutely useless drugs to people, and giving them these drugs, you know, so you can document, well, we're doing something. The Clinton Health Initiative, which has, how many names does it have now? About three or four different names incorporated. But hundreds of thousands of people were exposed basically to this ruse, thinking that they're taking medication to help them, but they're dying. But nobody tells them that they're dying, and nobody tells them that the drugs are no good. So at a whole other level, I think the Clintons have to account for the fact that they may very well be connected to mass deaths wherever these bogus drugs were distributed.
Well, and to make it even worse, if it could be possibly worse than that, a prime focus of the Clinton Foundation was to administer drugs to children, young children, to in theory fight HIV/AIDS. Now, it is possible for a young child there has been one medical advance that's very good, that mother-to-child transmission of HIV/AIDS has been greatly reduced. But normally, you know, HIV/AIDS is transmitted by sexual activity and or by drug use of dirty needles and stuff like that. So it's pretty uncommon, or less common, to have children, young children in particular, well before, you know, the age at which they would be engaged in sexual activity or trying drugs, hooked up with this stuff. So to focus on that area, my understanding, and I'm very squeamish and I'm certainly not a medical expert, my understanding is that taking HIV/AIDS medicine is a small portion of the issue. You have side effects you have to be aware of. You have, particularly in Africa and these poor countries, you have conditions where people are malnourished, where there isn't enough clean water, there isn't electricity to operate the various machines and apparatus that are needed in hospitals and elsewhere to, you know, keep things safe and cool and refrigerated and stuff like that. So they're very challenging conditions. And my understanding is that the tests that are used to determine whether people have HIV and AIDS are not as good in these areas. They give more false positives in these areas than here in the West, which may explain in part why the prevalence rate, the percentage ratio of people with HIV and AIDS, is much higher in many of these countries than it is now in the West. So this is a very challenging problem. This is not the kind of problem that, you know, you'd say, well, let's take somebody who's really good at making political speeches and put them in charge of this medical issue. This is a very challenging set of issues. And so for all the moralizers on the college campuses who are so quick to decide that they know how to run the world, I think the Harvards, the Yales, the Columbias, the well-endowed universities that have lent their name to this particular piece of the Clinton Foundation, starting in 2003, when legally it did not exist, have a lot of explaining to do about how they lent their name to these projects, how they continue to lend their name, who decided to lend their name, who did the diligence on this Clinton Foundation HIV/AIDS operation. You know, who allowed Harvard's name to be plastered all over this thing and Yale's name to be plastered all over this thing? Why didn't people study more carefully what the real issues are in HIV and AIDS around the world? Why do we have so many administrators coming out of Yale and Harvard and Columbia and the, you know, masters in public health programs and so few doctors? You know, why does that make sense? Why are we creating a gigantic health bureaucracy out of these endowed institutions who then become so dependent on federal funding for the hospitals they operate in them and support for their student loan programs, et cetera? Why do these brand names, these global brand names, why are they engaged in so many activities where their professors make a ton of money and either, you know, from speaking or side deals or just flat out from their salaries? and you know where you know, these universities make take in far more in revenue than they spend in expenses. You know,
Well, Charles, we are out of time.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately, times flew by, but I hope the listeners got an earful about the kind of money that's been, you know, just flying around. Hundreds of billions of dollars. And the Clintons seem, up to now, immune to any kind of accountability. Hopefully, we will get some in the near future. So, Charles, just quickly talk about your show on YouTube, how people can take a look at it.
Sure. Thank you so much for letting me bring it up. It's called Sunday with Charles, and it's typically at 3 p.m. on Sunday, but it's on YouTube, so you don't have to watch it live if you don't want to watch it. It's free. I do it with an organization called Crowdsource the Truth that is started months ago or about a year ago. Today has over 40,000 subscribers, and it's an active audience that feeds us leads. Typical show is about 2.5 hours. We try to provide real depth and ideas.
Okay. All righty. Stay tuned. Coming up next, The Infectious Myth with David Crow. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com, and we'll talk to each other tomorrow. Thanks again, Charles, for being with us.